Hello, this is Helpfully Yours, a podcast devoted to sharing and discussing stories of helping. I'm your host, Dr. Holly Howitt. As I mentioned before, this month, I'm focusing on people who have positively impacted my life. Tim Howitt is a person who has had the longest and biggest impact on my life besides my family of origin. Tim is the materials manager at Lafayette Surgical Specialty Hospital. And Tim is a true Renaissance man who loves expressing his creative side. He is a talented artist in multiple medias. He's currently teaching himself silk screening. He also performs stand-up comedy a few times a year. He is charming, funny, smart, and he's my husband. I'm proud to share this interview with you. Okay, so we are here with Tim Howitt on the Helpfully Yours podcast. Tim, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for asking me to do this. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this, and I'm really interested in what your stories are going to be because you haven't shared any of that with me. So why don't we just get right to it and tell me about a time that you helped someone.
Okay, well, this one involves you. It was the year of Katrina. As you know, we had only been married 3 or 4 months, which we're getting ready to celebrate our 18th anniversary. And we'd been married 3 or 4 months, living in a house, and Katrina hit. And my family is largely based in Metairie in the New Orleans area. Both, you know, my parents, my sister, and lots of cousins and stuff. So when they evacuated, my parents came to my house. My sister went to Aunt Karen's house here in Lafayette. And then, you know, nobody knew exactly that Katrina was going to end up being as bad as it was. So what we thought was going to be just a couple of days ended up being much, much worse. You know, Katrina hit. Nobody could go back home. The city was evacuated. I had an aunt and uncle who were just kind of in limbo on the road, so to speak, staying, last I knew, was hotels up in North Louisiana. And when it became obvious that Katrina was going to be more serious than anybody thought and nobody was going to be allowed back home for a while, that's when things, you know, it took a turn. You and I quickly, probably with your lead, took a proactive step of realizing, okay, we've got a situation here that we need to help people that are in distress, both emotional and physical. And I remember different things. I know we decided that I was going to borrow a bed, a mattress from an uncle of mine here in town so that somebody could stay on that. And then my aunt and uncle, who are very private people, traditionally great people, they didn't want to come down and stay with us, even though we repeatedly invited them. They were going to stay at a hotel up in North Louisiana. And if I remember correctly, their first night in, some no-name motel hell ended up being really, really bad. And the next day, to our surprise, a pleasant surprise, they called and took us up on our offer to come and stay with us. And again, I don't think they knew how long that would end up being. But they came and stayed with us. And one of the things I remember the most is that you and I went off to a coffee shop and we sat and started going over, okay, how are we going to make this work? How are we going to make it a pleasurable experience for the people that are staying with us, who again are distraught because they don't know the condition of their homes, their jobs, anything. And we came up with a list of ideas, set of rules and stuff like that, came back and had a family meeting with everybody that was in the house. And the reason why I remember that the most is my aunt and uncle's daughter, my cousin, she was staying at somebody, her family were staying at somebody's house in Baton Rouge. And I remember first she was shocked that her parents took us up on our offer because she knows they're private people. And then where they were staying was more chaotic. And she was jealous of the fact that we had had a family meeting and did things the Howitt way. We thought it through logically and all that. One of the things I also remember is we decided with that many people in the house, we would need a second refrigerator, and you were able to get a nice refrigerator that you wanted. You got a stainless steel refrigerator out of it. Yes, we had that delivered. I remember actually it was broken. We had to have it sent back and they brought us another one. We put that in the dining room area, because, you know, our house wasn't a big house, 15 to, you know, 100 square feet or so. But for the next, I guess, several weeks, we had people staying with us. You know, there was a lot of unknowns, there was anger, you know, natural reactions that people have to these kind of situations. And again, remember, for any viewers out of state, this is a catastrophe that had never really taken place in modern history before. People tend to forget, I mean, an entire city as big as New Orleans was evacuated. And, you know, this had never happened really before in modern history. So everything was new. My aunt and uncle, I think they stayed on the extra mattress in kind of a back room. My kids at the time, they bounced between their mom's house and our house. We wanted to make life as normal as possible for them as it could be. So when they would stay with us, they would get their bedrooms back and people would kind of shuffle around. I think my parents stayed on the sofa bed in the living room. And each of us took a turn cooking meals. Some of the rules I remember were, hey, you had to watch what you said around the kids. We didn't want the news on 24/7 because it just tended to frustrate my dad and some of the other people in the house. But we made it work. Eventually, you know, we were able to go to New Orleans to check it out. I remember one of the things I kept saying is, hey, we don't know the condition of the roads. We're allowed one flat tire, which I remember my dad, like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, we have one spare tire on the car. If the roads are littered with debris and we say blow a tire, we can change it. We blow a second tire, we're screwed. There's no mechanics. There's no anybody open, no stores to buy a tire to do it yourself. But again, we made it work. It was a testament, Holly, to you for, you know, we'd just been married a couple of months, but, you know, family first kind of thing. Eventually, you know, they were able to get back and had to live with my sister in her house because my parents' house did, you know, flood about a foot of water. And they saved my sister for several months until they eventually decided to abandon that house and buy another. But I guess because of the length of time and the number of people in the house, that's why that one sticks out. And again, I always remember my aunt. I take pride in the fact that as private as she was, didn't want to impose on us, that once she did agree to come stay with us, her demeanor changed. And who knows, maybe it made a difference to her to realize moving forward from that event that it's okay to accept help from people sometimes, particularly family and in such a situation. You know, we had our good nights, you know, played games and all kinds of stuff. So it wasn't, you know, some good came out of the tragedy.
Yeah. What I remember most about that time was just, it wasn't a question of like, if we were going to help or allow people, it was how we were going to do it. And so, yeah, I think while it was an unusual experience, and if I had to do it over again, I mean, I would not want Katrina to have happened less than 6 months after we'd been married, but, you know, we made it work. And
I remember even having my cousin, him and his wife, I can't remember why they were in town, but we let them stay, or they came to visit one day, I think it was.
I think they came over for a meal.
I remember they had their dog over, and the dog was in the backyard, and, you know, that was an unusual situation at our house that we, you know, had a dog running around and so forth. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it all worked out in the end.
It did. So let's move on to the next question, which is, tell me about a time when someone helped you.
This one, you know, this was an easy one for me. I know a lot of your guests, you know, can't think of anything. This one is the one that popped into my head immediately. And it again involves my parents. It was when I just finished my third year of college. I had gone to college for advertising in art. And the year four is when I started taking the real advertising classes. And it was always known, anybody in that field at UL at the time, or USL, knew it was a very hard course. And, you know, I was gung-ho, ready for it. And immediately I realized, oh my God, this is not for me. I had never really had any school failures in my life, at least not to this magnitude, but it quickly became that not only was it not for me, I happened to, just by bad luck, be going through a creative block at that time. And when I needed to be my most creative, I was my least creative in my life. So all of this hit at once. And at the age of, I guess I was 20, 21, to suddenly say, hey, everything you've been on track for the last 21 years and the last 3 years of college, you have to change that drastically. I remember calling I was 2 weeks into it. Back then, anybody who knows me now, I weigh 160 pounds. I probably weighed 130 back then, and I lost 10 pounds in 2 weeks because of the stress of the classes. I was staying up till 4 a.m. in the morning doing the assignments. It was just not a good environment for me. So after 2 weeks, I decided I can't do this anymore. I called my parents one evening, let them know this is, you know, just where I was at. You know, I was lost. I was devastated. And then that night I wasn't at my apartment. I think I was on campus or something, so my parents could reach me. But lo and behold, the next morning, I get a knock on my door. And when I open it, there's my parents. They had driven, well, they had tried to call me but couldn't reach me. But they had driven that morning up to see me to help me through this, you know, complication of my life. They had already called Dean Blanco, who is was future coach. Yes, Governor Blanco's husband, even though she wasn't nearly governor at the time, because this was 1990 or so, 1991. And they had called him because they had met him once at one of the freshman orientations or whatever. And he always told parents, if you ever need anything, let me know. So they had called and scheduled an appointment with him to see if he could help us. I'll never forget, you know, when I opened the door and my mom saw me, you know, I was already rail thin and now I was 10 pounds lighter. I hadn't shaved in several days and I looked, you know, just terrible. You know, not let alone the emotional, you know, toll I had going on the inside of me. And I remember she being, you know, I could tell was upset by that, not angry upset, but just, you know, didn't like seeing me that way. And we went and saw Dean Blanco. You know, long story short, it still wasn't the right fit for me to go into advertising. Nothing anybody could do. It was just, you know, a life change I had to go with and make the flow and decide to do something different. But the fact that my parents, you know, both on a, you know, in the evening made the decision, let's both take off work the next day. And even though we can't get in touch with him, we're just going to show up at his door, hope he's there and help him through this problem. I will never forget that. You know, some of those images are burned in my head. Like I said, opening the door and, you know, what are they doing here? The image of my mom looking like, oh my God, look how bad Tim looks.
So after that first, you know, immediate response, like what were some of the things that they did in the days, weeks, months that followed that continued to support you?
I know they helped guide me. I mean, I was, you know, totally lost, you know, sleep deprivation, just the whole fact that, you know, this isn't working out for me, the creative block, which ended up lasting, you know, to some degree, well, probably 10 years or so before I finally broke fully through. They were just there to help me with the things in life that came along with, okay, Tim, you're 3 years into college, you're paying for college yourself. Now you've got to, you need more money because now it's going to take you longer to finish college. You have to find another major, you know, careers, how's that going to lead to it and all that. I did have good people helping me. I remember in the, I guess it was the scheduling department, I can't remember what it was called at UL, who understood my plight and helped me as well. My teacher in the advertising thing helped me a lot. But my parents were just there for me for guidance, to let me know this was not going to be the end of the world, to listen, you know, that cliche thing of just there to listen. They were there for that too.
Mm-hmm. Did you seek any counseling or anything at that time?
No. Back then, counseling just really wasn't a thing like it is today. Mental health was not, you know, two words that had been shoved together. At school, I don't even remember I guess there was options for that. I just remember medical options. Oh, you cut yourself, you can go here, whatever. You know, my teacher, you know, he tried to talk me into staying in the program, but, my parents and I met with him too, now that I'm remembering it. And, he wanted me to stay in the program. There were 10 of us in the program, and actually in the end, 8 of us dropped out that year. It was the worst year that he had ever had for the number of students. But it wasn't meant to be for me. I look back, I still think now I wouldn't have been happy in it. While I wish, I wouldn't have had to, abandon it and just focus on, I need to get out of school in the next 2 years for financial reasons. I wish I would have had the option to, take some different courses that would have helped me more with a career. But overall, everybody did what they could. It was just an unfortunate situation that we had to get through.
Yeah. Well, so we've talked a little bit about, how we and you were helpful during Katrina and how your parents, helped you, earlier in your life. So it seems like you come from a family that likes to help and can sometimes ask for help. Talk about that growing up.
Actually, the asking for help isn't true. I grew up from a family, I look back at it, and now that I'm older and see more people in life and exposed to more personalities and all that, the Howitt's traditionally, both my family, my cousins, my grandparents and all that on the Howitt side, they were willing to help anybody at the drop of a hat, but not so much ask for help in return. I remember when my grandfather passed away and I wrote a eulogy. One of the things I put in it was something that somebody had said about my older brother, Scott, good friend of his from in college. He once described Scott as being somebody who will help anybody, anywhere, anytime, and never ask anything for return. And I always thought, that was the Howitt kind of creed, you could say. We'd stop, help strangers and all that kind of thing, happily do it and so forth. But I know me particularly growing up, I was terrible at asking for help. I just, I don't know if I saw it as a weakness or what, embarrassed. I don't know. I never was good at it. And actually I only really got over that hump. I know Holly, I've mentioned to you this before and you don't remember saying it, which I always find amusing, but you once said to me, you said, doesn't it feel good to help somebody? And I said, yeah. And you said, then why is it you're denying somebody else the same feeling to help you? And that's probably one of the top three, lessons I've learned in my life is, it's not right. I always like helping people, but I've had to learn over the years, pretty much because of that statement, that I need to be able to feel okay asking people for help and know that they will want to help. My best friend, Scott, I'm never afraid to call him up on a whim and say, hey, here's this situation. Can you come help me lift this piece of furniture? Hey, can you help Spencer? We can't be at his baseball game tonight. Can you go? And he always will say yes. And, I'll do the same for him. So it's good to have people you can count on like that. But yeah, I've had to learn to do that.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being with me today on the Helpful Yours podcast. I really appreciate the stories that you shared.
Thank you. I've been a longtime listener, first time guest.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
This has been an Atomic K production. Recording was done in Lafayette, Louisiana by Holly Howitt with editing and technical assistance from Spencer Howitt. Check out our website at helpfully-yours.alitu.com to listen to all episodes and as well as show notes. To make sure you don't miss an episode, make sure to subscribe to the Helpfully Yours podcast. Music is from Scenic World's Dissolving Art album. The Helpfully Yours podcast supports the mission of Beacon Community Connections. Learn more at beaconconnections.org.